Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to this last segment of Thursday Life. I'm Team Nidhi Sai's Bishu, and welcome to a new episode of A Matter of Conscience. Today we continue our conversation with Mr. Jayant Kumar Sengupta, who is the Chief Assistant Director, Community Education Division, Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission. The purpose of this series, A Matter of Conscience, is to share real-life stories of people who are passionate about walking on the path, listening to the voice of their conscience. Stories of people who are committed to align their acts according to the higher principles of life. Today, world over, think tanks are spending huge amounts of time and resources deliberating on how to raise the standard of living of people. In developed countries, they want to raise it to higher than what it is now, filling their lives with 21st century comforts and conveniences, making everyone's life an extension of their gadgets. While this is the story in the developed nations, in developing and underdeveloped countries, there is this real need to provide better food, better clothing, shelter, water, security, health, and so on. And all the solutions deliberated upon often look to technology to find answers. Whether it is poverty or pollution, whether it is carbon emissions or corruption, large amounts of money are being spent in finding solutions through technological innovations. This definitely has some merit. Technology undoubtedly has made our lives easy, and effective use of technology, of course, can assist greatly in problem solving many issues. But over-reliance on technology or looking at technology alone to solve all our issues is not only lopsided, but also dangerous. In fact, I'm reminded of Sir Albert Einstein, who said, "It has become appallingly obvious that our technology has exceeded our humanity." Therefore, Bhagwan says, what is important to focus on is not to just raise the standard of living, but raise the level of living. Can we work towards creating a higher level of living? A level of living where humility, where integrity and compassion are not exceptions, but principles which govern everyone's life. If we really strive to raise the level of living of society, then automatically the standard of living will rise. And what is most important is, even if there is no magical rise in standard of living, the standard of life will definitely become better. That is, people will live with more happiness, with more contentment, with less depression, less dejection, more satisfaction. Let me give you an example. A lady told her husband, "Avoid giving too many clothes for laundry this week." Husband asked, "What happened?" And the wife said, "The maid won't be coming for a week, for a couple of days. So let's have less work to do." Husband said, "Why? Why is the maid not coming?" And she says, "The maid is going to her daughter's place. She's going to spend some time with her granddaughter over the Dasara holidays. So let us ensure that we have less work to do." Husband says, "All right, I'll keep that in mind." And then the wife says, "Before I forget, how about if you offer the maid a festive bonus? How about maybe 500 rupees just for her vacation?" And husband says, "But why? Diwali is around the corner. Anyway, we have to give for Diwali, which we do every year. So we will give whatever we have to give then." And the wife says, "That's okay. You know, she's a poor lady, and whatever she earns is what we give. And she's going to see her daughter. She's going to be with her granddaughter after so many days. And with her meager income, you know, how would she be able to enjoy a good holiday? If we give her something now, probably she will have a good time with her family. Poor thing, you know. They have so little. They have to manage with so little." And the husband says, there you are, you know, again you're getting too sentimental, overly sentimental, you know, everybody's problem becomes your problems, and the ladies, you get so emotional. This is the problem. The wife says, listen, don't worry about the money. Let's cancel our plan for pizza for tonight. No point wasting money over 8 slices of decorated bread. If we forego our pizza dinner, we can help this lady. And the husband goes, great. So now we have to even give up our pizza night so that the maid can get a bonus. He's really upset. His wife was ruining their dinner plans. He was looking forward to the pizzas. But then he just didn't want to pick up a fight, so he just kept his cool. After all, his wife was not asking anything for herself, so he just let it be. So 3 days passed and the maid was back at work. And the husband saw and asked, so how was your holiday? And the maid said, it was wonderful, sir. Madam actually gave me 500 rupees as festive bonus, and that really added to the joy. The husband said, so did you go to your daughter's place? Did you meet your granddaughter? And she goes, yes, sir, we had such a great time. I spent the entire 500 in just 2 days. So the husband says, what did you buy with that money? And she says, sir, I bought my granddaughter a shirt for rupees 150. I also bought her a doll for rupees 40. I also got sweets for my daughter for rupees 50. We also offered sweets at the temple for another 50 rupees. And you know what? I paid rupees 70, and that was enough for the rent of this month. So that is a big relief. I have paid the rent for this month. And I also bought my daughter bangles for 25 rupees. And then, you know what? I had not brought anything for my son-in-law for very long. So this time I bought for him a nice cap for rupees 50. You know, he works in the sun all day. And I still had 75 rupees. So what I did, I bought some notebooks and pens and stationery for my granddaughter. She's been asking for this for so long. And you know, I had the money, so I got that also for her. Actually, sir, I still have 10 rupees left. I'm saving this for any emergency. It came out of her with so much of excitement and joy. And the husband said, you did all of this with just 500 rupees? She said, yeah, I still have 10 rupees left. The husband was shocked. The only thing that was going on in her mind, the only picture that was surfacing in his mind was that pizza. That pizza in his hand. And you know, he was comparing each piece of the pizza with each thing that maid bought for her family. The pens, the notebooks, the bangles, cap, t-shirt, sweets for daughter, sweets for the temple. It was as if each piece of pizza was speaking to him, asking him if he had got the message. The 8-piece pizza was giving him a discourse on invaluable lessons of life. Lessons which enabled him to think not about a high standard of living, but a higher level of living. What is just a 500 rupees for someone could be $1,000 for someone else. Some live to spend, but there are many who spend because they have to live. And the husband started thinking about higher level of living. Higher level of living where compassion and humility are natural, where these are followed not by force, but as Swami says, they come from source. Quote Albert Einstein, sir, again. He says, the world is a dangerous place to live, not because of the people who are evil, but because of the people who don't do anything about it. And in the previous episode of this program, I shared with you the experiences of Mr. Jayant Sengupta, wherein he narrated two powerful episodes. One was in the corporate sphere, where he, in spite of pressure from his bosses, did not yield to taking wrong means to get the job done, even though the bosses told him to do so. And the other instance was in his childhood, where he listened to the voice of conscience as a school kid, as a teenager, and decided to use words that are pleasant. Never use words and language that is unpleasant and indecent. Let me now play for you the rest of the conversation, where he talks about his zeal to do something related to Swami's teachings during his college days, in the college itself, followed by the story of how he happened to become the chief assistant director of Community Education Division in Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission.
Tell me, Jayant, you know, this was the experience that you had in your school days.
Yes.
Which is a profound experience, and it's really fantastic. It is actually life-defining, because, you know, to take that call that from today I will speak only
what is good,
only what is good, that can actually, we have no idea what difference it can make in our life, because we don't know how many times we have ruined our lives just by not being careful about what came out of our mouth, almost unconsciously, because we have not trained ourselves.
Yeah.
But tell me, when you moved on from your school days to your college, when you're doing your bachelor's and your master's, I think the challenge is even greater, isn't it? The peer pressure is bigger than how it was in the school. You're living now, you're a proper young adult, and now trying to live by values, live by Swami's teachings, is not as easy as it used to be in the school, isn't it?
Yeah. But thank God for that training and that consciousness all the time, that it grew in strength. So when it came to like college and all that, while many had the temptations or pressures of a teenager, or even moving into the very early part of adulthood, all the temptations and whatnot were there available right smack in front of you. So going to college, as I said, it was not that difficult, because at that time the confidence was already there. I knew what are the things to do and how to go about. And also by that time I was very much active in the Sai Center and Seva activities and all, bhajans and so on. So due to those activities, so, you know, many other extracurricular activities in college, extracurricular meaning in inverted commas.
Yes.
Those were not my cup of tea.
It just didn't figure in your scheme of things.
No, it didn't. Yeah, it didn't figure in my agenda or scheme of things. And so I didn't have a problem. But just to share that, I always had this thing about, Swami, how can I, you see, like I said, when we go to the Sai Center,
yes,
by default we become probably disciplined, or, you know, we do things the way that is supposed to be done, because that's the comfort zone.
Yeah.
Within
the environment is such.
The environment is such.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a likely high possibility that you not do something wrong. That's the communal pressure and the organization pressure, I guess.
And the way the ambience is there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the guidance.
It's like it's very easy to be nice in Prashantanilayam.
Yeah.
To be good in Prashantanilayam.
Yeah. Like Swami always says, let me throw you outside and see whether can you be that same Prashanti,
yes,
you know, experiencing Shanti all the time.
Yes.
Can you do that?
Mm.
You know, so like Swami always says that the center is not the four walls that you see and go to and all,
yes,
that. Still remember Swami advising one of our very senior devotees in Malaysia, that in one particular interview that he had, Swami turned around and told him that, hey, look here, be a walking temple.
Oh, wow.
Be a walking center. Don't limit yourself. Don't limit Sai to the center. Going back to a mathematical equation, Swami says omnipresent. I mean, Swami is everywhere. So how can we live that everywhereness? That awareness that He's everywhere and His teachings needs to be everywhere.
Mm.
So the only way to do it is when we have the same intensity, or maybe even more, in society, in the home, in our workplace, in college, with our friends and so on and so forth. So that was a very strong element, and so that is fine. So when it came to talking about comfort zone, I still remember when I was pursuing my MBA. So one of the topics, you know, I always told Swami, please guide me. Yeah, sharing things in the center is so easy, but how can you bring it outside? How can you share that human values or Swami's teachings to people outside of the Sai Center? So then I thought, okay, now I'm a student. There's something called research. I'm not bound by the books. When we do research, be it in a master, postgraduate, whether it's master's or PhD, you have that freedom of choice to choose a particular topic and go on researching into that topic. So when you get that freedom, it's like, wow, this is an opportunity. You can choose something and prove it and look at the findings and, you know, contribute towards that literature. So when I was doing my master's, towards the end of it, as I was preparing my thesis, so the day came, I had a tough time selecting a topic. And everybody else was like, hey, why haven't you, you know, it's so easy. Just take a previous study and change the variables. So I told, what? Are you sure? Yeah, just do that. Wow, that's quite easy. If that's the case, then, you know, doing an MBA or PhD is no big deal. So it was like, I wanted something more. So then I sort of challenged myself. I said, you know, let me take something of Swami's and see how I can apply it. Taking a spiritual teaching principle, putting it in the corporate element. So that's when, you know, of course, knowing what students in the Sri Sai University have done, and, you know, I would say like you all are specialists in the area of ethics, you know, especially when it comes to topics like ethics, integrity, value-based systems, and so on and so forth. So when I did some of my findings in the net, suddenly this term of ethical value systems popped up. And it was a particular study done by Professor Peter Pruzan.
Oh, yes.
And that caught my attention. So then I went on and I actually then sat down and I contemplated, and next thing I was writing down this title, Ethical Value Systems in Organizations, the Impact of Values on Job Satisfaction and Organization Commitment.
Oh, wow. It just came.
Yeah. Okay. How can it impact people?
Yes.
So what area of impact? So then these two things came. You know, how would values contribute towards job satisfaction, and how would values contribute towards an employee having organization commitment?
Commitment.
Because at that time I found that based on studies that there was a real problem area when it comes to job satisfaction and also commitment. Levels of commitments were slowly being tested in many organizations. For example, one very clear element was switching of jobs, which was very rampant. And people would just, I still remember when I was working, you know, every other person that I bumped into the organization was like working there for 15 years, 10 years, 20 years. Some even, you know, became furnitures, fittings and features of the organization, you know, and they retired there, you know, once and for all. It was like, you know, one for all and all for one. And I was thinking, wow. But then slowly, as I spoke to my peers, my circle of friends, I have a particular friend who has changed in the past 20 years, has gone into 30 jobs. So it's like, where's your level? You know, it doesn't fit into commitment. You know, it doesn't fit the description of commitment. And the question then comes, if you change too often, that means satisfaction is being impaired.
Yes.
There's a question of satisfaction. So I took that topic, and when I showed my supervisor, for a moment he was quiet, he was looking puzzled. Then he pops up the question, he says, where did you get this title? So I was afraid that, oh God, don't tell me that, you know, it's not acceptable. And I was already approaching deadline to submit my proposal. I said, don't tell me I have to go. I mean, it's already so difficult. Then he said, you know, very simply, I said, why, sir, is there an issue? Should I change my topic? Is it something that is not acceptable? He said, no. And this is the first time I'm seeing such a topic, and it sounds very interesting.
Oh, okay.
How did you get this topic? Oh, okay, so where are you going to obtain your data? Well, actually, I'm planning to go to India. You know, there's this organization, you know, there's Satya Sai organization, you know, and in India, there's, you know, there's a Satya Sai University. The students there, you know, one of their sort of backbone is on value-based teachings. So there's a lot of data there. So I'm trying to see whether some of those data that I, if I can obtain it, you know, will it help? Oh, is there such a place? I said, yeah, sir, maybe you should go and visit. You know? I said, so then he tells me, oh, okay, fine, you know, you go ahead and get as much information. You know? So that's when I, that particular year, you know, I'd come to Patti and accidentally meeting one of the ex-students, then slowly connecting to people who guided me to this. You know, I even met Professor Peter Pruzan, and also Professor Anantharaman, okay, who had done a lot of work in this field. And they guided me quite a bit. You know, I really owe a lot to them, because though it was, you know, not to say that a lot of time, but the little time, those guidance were good enough to make me carry on with my research. So at the end of the day, you know, I completed that and I was so happy. You see, normally people go the common way, you know, find the easy way out. Oh, okay, let's do what everybody does, and why go through the hassle? Why try to be different and whatnot? But to those people who say all that, I have just one simple question to them. Would you like to eat the same food every day? I'm sure the answer would be no, you know. So just like that. You know, at times we need different flavors.
And if it is something for our good,
yes,
then why not?
Yes.
It's worth it.
Exactly. Because it was a dilemma at that point of time, and I felt that the research that I did has contributed. Because slowly the corporate world was looking at a drought of integrity, drought of passion, drought of commitment that was slowly building up into a trend.
Hmm.
Now, you know, that definitely, as they say in management, to retain someone, the cost of employing a new person will be 3 times more if you are able to retain an employee. So if you go by that formula, now if that's the case, looks like retaining employees was slowly becoming an issue.
Hmm.
And if that's an issue, which means organizations would experience higher cost in terms of human capital. Now, if they can reduce that, you know, every organization, you know, we all know that it's all profit orientated. Anything to bring down losses and increase profits, that's the main gain. That's the truth. That's reality. There are not many companies that actually really, really sort of have a high percentage of integrity or ethics to be their backbone. There are very few.
They're not here to serve. They're here to make profits.
Yeah. I mean, that's their main goal, whatever it is. When we talk about how we can reduce such costs.
So we have to talk in their language.
In their language. You know, how we can reduce that cost. And in turn, reducing costs
means, so if values helps them to improve profits, why not?
Why not? You know, why not do it?
Hmm.
Why not take on that path? You know, yes. Take on that option.
Yes.
And see, you may be cutting down costs in not in terms of business transactions, but at least looking at operation costs. And if that can be done, why not? So that was something that led me to an experience and a satisfaction. In fact, I'd used some studies, some research that Dr. Shivakumar had done. You know, I used some of his data into my
thesis. He's a faculty member in the Department of Management.
Yeah, it was nice of him, you know, when I met him and he said, sir, you know, would you mind sharing? I said, yeah, fine, take it, please.
He gave you an entire thesis?
Yeah, he gave me the whole entire folder.
Oh, wow. I remember his is a very massive thesis.
Massive. Massive. And I was like, thank you, Swami.
It's really amazing, huh? The way Swami has been guiding you and the way he's allowed you to follow your heart.
Yes. Yes.
Can I say that, you know, you now landing up in the Anti-Corruption Commission also is some way Bhagwan allowing you to follow your heart and do something that you always wanted to do?
Most definitely. I've always told Swami, you guide me. You are my only guide. I will just throw myself to you and you know what's best for me. And because of follow the master,
yes,
I will stick on to you. If you don't stick on to me, I will stick on to you till I force you to do something that is good for me.
Oh, wow.
a bit of a threat, but it's okay. Swami says, don't have attachment. But attachment to God is good. So it's similar on that note. And yes, because all my life, you know, being in the corporate world and going through some of those experiences slowly showed me that I needed a different experience. And what my heart was calling out for at that time was really, really calling out for, Swami, how can I have an impact? Impact in the sense that I know what you have taught is so great. There's so much of energy, there's so much of high values, the level of excellence, as Swami always talks about. It cannot be just sitting down in the centers or just confined to one place. It needs to be out there. How can people have that taste of your nectar? And I always told Swami, I think corporate world is not my cup of tea. Now I need to look something that gives me the freedom to really expound and expand on your teachings. Please put me in a place where I can do that and where the environment is such. I know I can't be in Prashanti Nilayam. Of course, I would love to be, you know, probably in either employed in the university or any of the things there, because every time I come here and I spend sometimes weeks or maybe a few days, I just don't feel like going back. But I know in reality that may not be possible, and maybe Swami has, you know, different plans for me outside. Yes. To expand his team. So I said, Swami, if that's the case, please show me a place that I can do this. So in between, what had happened was, due to some ups and downs in my life, slowly my responsibilities grew. And as that grew, you know, the yearning to find something really, really of satisfaction, self-satisfaction.
Responsibilities in the family.
Yes. Mm. As that was building up, I said, no, I can't just go and just simply get a job. Because at the end of the day, I always share this with my friends and some of the youths, you know, back in the center. I said, I always tell them, when you guys are looking for a job later on or looking for a career, look for something that will bring happiness.
Yes.
And look for something that will, in a simple way or in simple terms, just give you a good night's sleep.
Yes.
If you can come back home after a days of work and you can comfortably lay your head on your pillow and go into sleep, and while sleeping you're able to smile.
Yes.
That means whatever you have done on that day has satisfied your soul. And if you have reached that point, then it means that that job is meant for you, or that career is going to help you.
Yes.
Otherwise, look out for another job, or maybe change your career. Just don't go for the money, because it's not worth it. It's not worth it earning big bucks, but coming back home with bigger headaches. I know of many people who end up with, you know, health issues and so on and so forth due to work pressure. Of course, pressure is always there, but it's just that when you get that satisfaction. So how I ended up in this anti-corruption commission is very interesting, because as I was looking for the job, I still remember, while I was in a temporary job, had gone, met a friend of mine. And suddenly, you know, he says, while during our conversation, suddenly pops up this question, hey, would you like to work for the MECC? MECC means the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission. I was like, what did you say? So yeah, MECC, you know, anti-corruption. What's it about? I said, are you sure? Because 2 years ago I asked you the same thing and you told me don't waste your time. And now you're telling me, hey, there's an opening, you know, I think you should apply. I said, what am I supposed to do? I don't know anything about anti-corruption. No, nothing about investigation and all, you know, they just need someone to help them out for 2 years or so in some, you know, in an area related to English documentation and communication in English. So, you know, since you were in the English daily and all that, I'm sure that's no big deal for you. You can do this easily. Probably you'll enjoy. And what happened was, actually 2 years before that, as I read more about this organization, I always had this prayer, Swami, is it possible for me to work here?
Oh, wow.
Because you're fighting for a good cause.
Yes.
And it's very much linked to what Swami has taught us. Right from the beginning, you know, going back to Balvikas and then into the center and coming here, listening to Swami, reading literatures. It's so much in connection.
And you always wanted to take his message out of the four walls of the Sai Center.
Yes.
And this is an organization which is ensuring that people walk on that path.
Exactly. I still remember when he said yes, and I immediately sent him the thing and...
Your CV.
My CV. And finally, actually, that year, it was 2011, and November 23rd, the most auspicious day of our lives.
Yes.
That's the day, you know, I was able to send my application. And 2 months later, I was asked to report for work in that organization. And believe me, Bishu, my workplace is 45 kilometers away from home. And many of my friends, be it outside the Sai Circle and inside the Sai Circle, said I was a lunatic. Said, first thing was, why are you joining this place? These people are not... as what they say and blah blah and so on, because there was a lot of negative perception at that time. And you know, so say, why are you wasting your time? And then you have to travel so far. Oh, if you join another corporate, you'll earn more and so on and so forth. So the materialistic element was coming as an excuse or the reasoning at that time. So to me it was, no, I prayed to Swami. I was on the verge of falling off the cliff. It's only my nail hanging on to the cliff, and I still had the belief of having faith in him, and he has given me this opportunity. So I've taken it. And of course, you know, later on I keep telling my friends, hey, how long? Because a lot of, many of my friends, their workplace is just 15 kilometers, 20 kilometers away. So I asked them, how long does it take to go to work? I say, oh, I have to get up early in the morning, and immediately they frown and they already rattled. So they ask me, so, you know, you're in such a place, you know, so how long does it take for you? Thinking that, same. I say, look here, you take 1 hour for a 20 kilometer ride. I take 50 minutes for a 45 kilometer ride. And I don't face the traffic. I'm so happy. I'm smiling while I'm driving. Bhajans are going on. I'm listening to the radio. I reach the office. I've got no tension on the road. But you have tension immediately you set foot on the road. So anyway, apart from that, so once I landed this job, I wouldn't believe it. I walked in and I thought, you know, enforcement agency, formalities, and you know, what's it all about? You won't believe it till today, because the role of this division, community education division, as it says, community education, which is educating the community, educating the public on the ills of corruption and to instill and strengthen integrity. When you talk about integrity, it's a huge big word where you find other mini ships known as moral values, truth,
everything flows into it. Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, Ahimsa.
Everything, everything. And I'm like, wow. Because every time me and my colleagues, we sit down or go into a discussion, is, okay, what do we tell the public? How can we enhance the education that we are trying to provide? How can we enhance that message so that the people have this strength and belief that the road to integrity is going to solve many social and national issues.
Yes.
And make the country a cleaner country. And what we at the commission always say is a zero tolerance on corruption. How can we achieve that? Of course, looking at a no corruption, it's like, it's a far-fetched, it's something of an ideal, you know, maybe after Kali Yuga, you know. So now in the world, in the experience of Kali Yuga and looking at so much of positives and negatives and all that going around, the best thing is, okay, to set a zero tolerance. How can society be zero tolerant on corruption and live by integrity?
Yes.
So words like ethics come into play, compliance, accountability, honesty, trustworthiness. And suddenly I'm like, am I reading Sanatana Sarathi? Is Professor Anil Kumar here? Or suddenly, am I hearing Swami's discourse? So then I see that match. I still remember the second week of me being there, see, I know nuts about corruption and anti, yeah, I know the just basic activity, oh, bribe. But the knowledge behind what it takes to fight corruption, I only knew as I went in here. And slowly I saw the connection between what Swami teaches us and how actually whatever Swami has taught us actually can help in this cause, in this big national cause.
Wow.
That is not only a national problem, but we see that corruption is a main issue today in any country.
Yes.
It destroys the nation, it
yes.
destroys families, it destroys the fabric of society.
Yes.
It can destroy the whole world because it leads to so much of greed, so much of unethical mannerism and ways of doing things, so much of non-compliance and so on and so forth. So the question of integrity is at stake. Integrity is taking a beating today. And that's what we are tasked to do at the commission. So every day it's like, how do we enhance that education? How do we make that message be injected into the minds of people? So every day it's like we are talking about all this, you know. Okay, today we give a talk, now what should we touch on? We are looking at today, you know, different modules for different, in fact, we are slowly moving into schools and
wow.
reaching out to school children, you know, other than things like private sector, civil society, public sector, private, those are common. But now we are going into schools and seeing how we can educate the children to start from young. Because sometimes, you know, as they say, the old iron is very difficult to bend and change.
Yes.
But a young stock can easily be shaped
yes.
in that way. So when I see all this and, you know, every day in the office, they start with a prayer and before meetings they are praying. Though it's in the Islam religion, through the Islam way, but the fact that Swami has taught us to be universal, sarva-dharma and all that. So somebody tells me, some of my other, hey, do you feel different? In fact, there are many people from the center. Hey, is it so, you know, how, you know, they will be praying in their own and it's not your belief? I say, yeah, it may not be my belief, but please don't forget what Swami taught us. And because of what Swami taught us and exposed us, by saying that all religions are one, there's only one religion, the religion of love. They come in different names and different forms and different explanations, but they are all the same at the end of the day. Because of that and the principle of sarva dharma. So once again, you know, this place of work did not become alien to me. I was not alienated. In fact, I felt that many times I felt like I was really in Prashanti, moving
oh, wow.
around, and wow, you know.
It's really fantastic, Jayant, when you think about it, going into schools and colleges and telling them that I'm from the Satyasaya organization and we want to tell you about values, and trying to get an opening or a slot is one way of doing things which will come with its own challenges. And going to a school and college and saying, I am from the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission.
Yeah.
And I want 1 hour with the students. I don't think there will be any questions asked. It's going from the government. And you can happily go with the tag of being the community education officer of the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission and go and talk them about everything about that Swami wanted you to speak.
Exactly. You have the license, you know. In fact, in some of, whether it's my chief commissioner or the deputy or, you know, if I have to prepare for some of the directors, you know, a speech or anything like that, so I will put in, you know.
You're most well-equipped. Swami has no patents on whatever he has said. He can happily use them.
Well, thank God there are no patents, you know. I am free to use Swami's expressions and teachings, you know, love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never,
yes.
be good, do good, see good. So all this, you know,
generously you can use.
Generously, you know, without even saying, you know, and when they hear, oh, yeah, it's right. Oh, where did you get this? Don't worry. Just concentrate on, you know, the niceness of things, you know. But of course, you see, to me, one of the things, I feel really blessed, honored,
yes.
proud
yes.
to be someone who is following Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba.
Yes.
Why I say this? Because, in fact, just a few years ago, I was preparing my CV. And I saw some samples of other CVs and, you know, suddenly I see your first page is like your life's mission, your mission statement, you know, your objectives. And basically saying who are you and what is your thought flow. what are your goals in life. And I still have it in my CV, and it is something that will not remove it. And many people have told me, no, don't put it. What I'm trying to say here is, I've boldly put there that I am an active member of the Sri Satya Sai Baba organization, which is an organization, is a non-profit, non-religious, non-sectarian organization in the pursuit of spreading human values and helping the poor and the needy. So I put that there.
Wow. It's there on your CV.
Yes. In fact, during the time when I was looking for a job, it was 2011, and after April, and in fact, in sometime in March, when Swami was physically ill, and of course it was in the news and things like that, I remember I had gone for an interview, and when they saw this, they said, oh, you are a member of the Satya Sai Baba. Oh, is it the same Sai Baba, you know, in India? I said, yes. Ah, he's not well, huh? Mm, yeah. I will pray for him. That's like, wow.
Mm.
That's like, but there were many who previously don't put all these. Then, you know, people might think you are religious. Then they might not take you in. They might feel that. I said, so then again, Swami's teaching. Why fear when I am here?
Why do we have to hide what is our strength?
Exactly.
That is our strength.
And I told this person, you know, they were quite senior members in our SAI organization, I said, what is there to be afraid of? We should be bold enough to come out and say that we are product of Satya Sai Baba.
Yes.
Why shouldn't we be proud of promoting this product?
Yes.
It's not egoistic or anything like that. But that humongous goodness that Swami has taught us.
Yes.
Why should we keep it to ourselves? It should be expanded, Swami says. It's for expansion of consciousness.
And what is our strength? Many times we think that that will be a disadvantage to us. And how much more foolish can we be to not recognize what is our strength and think that would be to our disadvantage and that would be to our demerit?
Yes, definitely. After all, you're using Swami's name.
Mm.
There's so much of divine energy. Forget about everything else. But that divine energy, that positive energy, if it's so highly charged, it will protect us. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of.
You just need to have that courage. You should have that courage to say that, yes, I am a follower of Sai Baba.
Yeah. In fact, while one of time I was the Deputy National Youth Coordinator in Malaysia, and one of the things that I used to challenge some of our youths was, if you're daring enough, wherever you go, wherever you work, you must be proud and daring enough to reveal and say that yes, you are a member of the organization. Yes, you are a follower of Satya Sai Baba. Let them ask and you tell them and you explain.
Yes.
What is there to hide? I still remember, you know, when I was working in my first job, this is one instance I would like to share of, you know, how not to be afraid of revealing yourself. You know, so in the beginning time, with my bosses, when I sort of shared that, you know, I'm active in this organization. So in the early years, they were a bit apprehensive and used to tell me things like, you know, you should balance work and social life. This is your bread and butter. That is not your bread and butter. You should focus on your bread and butter. You know, all these cliches. But soon, after some time, after sort of proving yourself in a way that you are dependent, you're responsible, and you perform your job well and set that confidence on your leaders in the organization. In fact, there came a time where my boss was looking out employees for new positions. And one day she called me in and said, hey, have a seat. We are looking to expand. We need some people. Do you have anyone from your organization?
Oh, wow. From your organization.
I was like, what? You're asking me recruit? No, just put an ad and, you know. Say, no. Before putting the ad, if you think you have someone in your organization that can work like you, I also had another brother then, if this guy or this person can work like y'all, I think I'll not waste my time with the advertisement. Just bring this person in and we'll take them on.
Fantastic. That is our tribute to Swami.
Yeah. So at that point of time, I felt, Swami, thank you for guiding me in that way. Because today, it's not my good name. It's His good name that needs to be upheld. And it's the responsibility of every single Sai a devotee, aspirant, follower, whatever that you want to call yourself, that if you follow the master, number one, please ensure that you always make him proud.
Yes.
Always not to hurt our master. Make him so happy and proud that we in turn become so proud and so happy that voluntarily we just open our mouth and say, yeah, you know, I'm Sai devotee, I'm going for a Sai activity, oh yes.
And people look up to you with respect.
Yes, but at the same time, do not abuse
yes.
that privilege and honor.
Yes.
Whatever that needs to be done, your responsibility must be there. Everything must strike a balance. Otherwise then, like I said, any point of time, two things. I do not want to hurt Swami and I do not want to hurt my parents. And I think if every one of us can have that in mind, that becomes a great anchor for us to hold on. It's something so important.
Yes.
And it can take us away from all kinds of troubles, especially now, you know, in this Kali Yuga
yes.
age.
You will not only fortify yourself from anything that is not proper, any act that is not proper, but also you will actually embolden yourself
yes.
with a power that can take you anywhere in the world.
Yeah, definitely. We are so lucky.
Absolutely.
We are so lucky, we are so yeah. fortunate.
Yes.
And all of us should always reflect and look back and see the jewel that Swami has given us.
Yes.
And we should keep protecting this jewel and
yes.
keep shining it.
Absolutely. And if you protect the jewel of His teachings with us, He will make a jewel out of us.
Exactly. Yeah, very nicely. Very nicely put. Because, you know, going back to that, I think Swami has said, you know, once, I think it's in one of Swami's discourses, I think He was addressing the boys and He mentioned that, boys, there'll be one day that you will forget this name. You might forget this name, you might forget this form, you might forget the experiences, but please do not forget the teachings.
Wow.
The teachings that I've left with you, the teachings that I've given you, do not forget that. It's just like Swami has said about prayers.
Yes.
You can forget all mantras. Don't forget the Gayatri mantra.
Yes.
That's the main.
As they say, the best way to value your master is to master his values.
To master his values.
I think that is the way we can make him proud.
Yes.
It is not enough to just to love him. It is more important that whenever he sees us, there is that smile of satisfaction on his face.
Exactly. And probably, you know, we would use the simple English term called thank you. Right? But I remember going through a photo album. I forgot the title of the book. A huge book in one Sai youth's house in Chennai that I came across this album. And I turned to a particular page which had a photograph. And the caption was talking about thank you. And the description explains a dialogue. Swami is saying to this person, that why are you saying thank you to me? Saying thank you to me is like treating me like a third person.
Yeah.
So there is no need. When you say thank you, that means I am a third person.
Yes.
So am I a third person to you? So, you know, the word is not thank you. But by doing so, by following his teachings,
yes.
by reminding ourselves every day, every moment, in whatever we do, that it is actually meant to be put into practice.
Yes.
It is not something for us to be afraid of or to see, you know, will it work, will it not work? But at times, so what? We only live once. Why not just use it? After all, it's good.
Yes.
If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, never mind. There is something else. But never lose hope, never lose yes. faith.
And I feel what we will realize and what needs to be also communicated to the youth of today, to the people of today, one thing is to get just fascinated by Swami's miracles and, you know, by Vibhuti coming out here or, you know, but we should be more fascinated by what his teachings can do to us.
Exactly.
And secondly, just like there are so many things which are cool things for us today, you go there and have a get-together or have this car or take this trip. You know, these are the cool things. Or have this gadget and do this thing with this gadget. That's a cool thing to do. I feel it should become a cool thing to actually live some of these teachings. It will become actually. It will become very fashionable.
Exactly. Talking about fashion, today you have smartphones.
Yeah.
And I still remember when Radio Sai first was launched and the satellite radio
yeah.
was being sold. And in fact, I just wanted to get that. And that was back in 2001. So somehow I made my savings and I said, no, I must get this equipment. And I put it, and today I must to share this message with, you know, all listeners who are going to listen to this, that what Swami has blessed Radio Sai is another tool for us to look back. And there's so much of information. Honestly, Bishu, you know, I go into the website and I sometimes don't know where to start from. Because there's so much of information. There's so much of guidance. I wouldn't say information, yes, but there's so much of guidance that each and every one of us can just tap into.
Yes.
And Swami has blessed all of us with this particular tool that He has left behind. And I would say it's like a legacy for us to search for whatever materials, knowledge, just for us to enable us to ignite that divinity in us. You know, as Swami has said, your own purpose is to go back to the source.
Yes.
And to search for the divinity within you. And we have that. You know, we don't have to look far. Just by a click. You know, today you can download it on your handset. In fact, whenever nowadays I look for a smartphone, first thing I see is, can I download Radio Sai? If that phone does not allow me to download Radio Sai app, or unable to, you know, browse it and listen, then forget about it.
It's like Hanuman seeing that pearl necklace, then okay, if it doesn't have Ram now, I don't want that.
I don't want it.
Yeah. And I think that should be our attitude, in the sense that anything we do, and if we can't see Sai in that, we don't want it.
Yeah.
You are looking for Sai in everything. If you are able to convince that people in the immigration office or in the various offices in the first instance, you know, where you mentioned about how you waited to get the passes for the event management firm you're working, you know, that is because you are trying to see Sai in them, you know.
Yes.
Only then can you have that patience.
That's only a huge wave that I came across. Just one last experience I will share, talking about this and how you mentioned about putting the sinus everywhere.
Yes.
You know, not the sinus that we have, you know, the health, it blocks our breathing and, you know, yes, cause a lot, yes, of problems. But this sinus,
S-A-I
that we think. The big challenge came in my work here in the commission when about 2 years ago I was surprisingly involved in a huge transformation program of the whole commission, because the commission had a lot of negativity thrown on them due to some past history. So that led to a lot of misconception, an area of perception, a problem, you know, and the image and all that sort. So as we know, in any society, in any country, you know, civil society, strong civil society are normally strong critics of whether it's the government or enforcement agencies or policies or so on and so forth. So I was given the task and I was no one, and I don't know how this thing came up to me and what made the organization or the management then, the top management, choose me to head this particular transformation agenda. And it was on to look at how, because the communication gap between the commission and civil society groups, you know, those hardcore people, organizations that whatever happens, they really hit you in the media and criticize, and, you know, there were strong critics. So how can we work together, build confidence, and see how both parties can reach to the destination of the final destination, which is eradicating corruption. Because both on the same track, but it's just that one is on the left side, one is on the right side, but actually we are all heading towards the same direction, which is eradicating corruption. Now that was a huge challenge, and when it landed on me, first thing I prayed to Swami, I said, Swami, you have to do this. Because number one, I've got no clue, I've got no knowledge, and everybody is expecting me, who is a nobody, to face up to huge giants who are major critics. It's like as if you pick up the phone and speak to them, the minute they hear the name of the organization, they would just hang up.
Oh.
It was at that level. But due to the grace of Swami and Swami's guidance, and at that point of time, I was praying, and first thing Swami said, hey, listen to Radio Sai, right? What does Radio Sai carry as a slogan? Heart to heart. Go on that mode. Because if you can go heart to heart, they will melt. when they melt, use that opportunity to then explain and respond, not react. So as I used all these recipes that Swami has, you know, laid out, and it worked. Today, there's a lot of collaboration, cooperation between the commission and various civil society groups, and they are moving together.
Wow.
2 years ago, it was zero. Today, they're moving together, and we are seeing very much in communication. We're able to speak, and I still remember the first time I was thinking, how am I going to approach these people? Because at the mere sound of the name of the organization, they're just going to reject you. They'll shut their doors. So how? So you can't call them. You call them, they'll say, oh, don't waste my time, and they'll put down the phone. So what was it? So I'd send them an email. I said, the best thing to do is email. There's no interaction, no voice. So let's see what happens. So in that email, of course, Swami always says, be honest and truthful about your intentions. Because that's the only way the heart can melt. If anything else, it's not going to work. So as I explained and all that, to my surprise, and when I use words, once again, coming back to beautiful words, things like, how can we work together? How can you help us? The element of help never comes in now. So throwing back and saying, how can you help us in becoming better? So it's about humility again.
Yes.
So that element comes in.
Not from a position of authority.
No.
Not from a high pedestal.
No.
So allowing your ego.
Yes.
And allowing love to play a major role.
Once again, going back to as I was saying, at the end of the day, the person across you is also a human being. So let's go on a human to human interaction and see if it works. True enough, it has worked. And once again, it's all due to Swami. Nothing else. If he doesn't move, nothing moves.
And he moves. He all the time moves.
And we need to move with him.
Yes. When our intentions are pure, he will move to any extent.
Yes. And we will go to destinations and things that, you know, beyond our imagination.
Yes. Fantastic. Beautiful, Jayant. Many beautiful words we spoke. It's almost 2 hours since we started this conversation, and it is 1:15 in the night. I didn't even realize, but I think it was a beautiful satsang. And I'm really so grateful to Bhagwan that he arranged this, and I'm so happy that Bhagwan has finally given you a place where you are able to not only experience Prashanti, but also be in a position to share Prashanti and create Prashantis in the hearts of people in Malaysia, in small regions in Malaysia. And I think all these years, when you look back, Swami has prepared you for this beautiful role. He has a plan for each one of us. And when there are times when you feel, it just hits you that, you know, whatever you are doing now, it is because in so many little ways, he was chiseling you all the while so that he can finally give you one role, so that through our pipes, if they become hollow, his breath can blow.
But that can only happen, Bishu, if we allow ourselves for him to work us
through,
basically.
Us, yes.
And just surrender ourselves.
Surrender. Yes.
And let him maneuver us.
Yes.
Rather than we trying to maneuver according to his way, but just to surrender and let him drive us.
Yes. Let him become that Krishna.
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Jayant, for coming to the studios. And I know it is so late in the night, but you took the trouble to come. And I know you have to leave tomorrow morning, but still you are so kind and so obliging to come for this conversation. I'm really grateful to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bishu, for giving this opportunity. And definitely to share things that Swami has given us, and to share with everyone, and to see that whatever happiness that I've experienced, you know, if others can also have that happiness, why not?
Beautiful. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
So that was Jayant Kumar Sengupta from Malaysia. We recorded this conversation in the early part of this month. He was here only for a day, and by Bhagwan's grace, we were able to document his experiences. Dear listeners, do tell us what you feel about what we discussed in this episode of A Matter of Conscience. I asked Jayant, is Radio Sai helping you in any way to follow your conscience, to follow on this path? And he said, Radio Sai is what is keeping me tuned to Swami all the time. Whenever I go to office, on the way I am listening to bhajans and to discourses, to conversations, and that is what is helping me. I hope Radio Sai is helping you too, dear listeners, in this journey of walking on the path shown to us so lovingly, so painstakingly by our divine beloved Bhagwan. So do tell us what you feel about this program. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 9:50, and it is time to conclude this day-long Thursday live sessions. Even as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama entitled Savitri, presented by Balvikas Children of Kerala. This was first broadcast on December 2002. So continue to listen and let us tune ourselves to his message and his love and experience his grace. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.